You're listening to local and regional news on KMUN. I'm Ava Berardi.
And I'm Katie Frankowitz. A final report by the Clatsop County District Attorney's Office has concluded that police officers were justified in fatally shooting a man in a seaside neighborhood in early July. The report also released the most detailed account of the shooting since it occurred. On July 8th, Hayes McLeod, a 24-year-old from Eatonville, Washington, was wanted for two homicides committed that same day in Washington State. A vehicle associated with him was spotted in Seaside. According to the district attorney's office, law enforcement attempted a high-risk traffic stop. McLeod stopped in a driveway on Sunset Boulevard near the popular Cove area and began shooting through the rear window at law enforcement. Officers returned fire and McLeod fled to the end of the roadway. According to officers at the scene, his car crashed into a fence and came to a stop. According to the report from the district attorney's office, officers approached the car after several minutes and found McLeod slumped over, dead, with a rifle next to him. An autopsy found McLeod died from a gunshot wound to the chest. Cannon Beach Police Officer James Jordan and Gearhart Police Officer Jeremiah Morris were placed on administrative leave pending the investigation. The evening of the shooting, people in Clatsop County received a countywide emergency alert, while residents on Sunset Boulevard were briefly told to shelter in place. The city of Astoria has a new fire chief. City Manager Scott Spence announced on Friday that the city has hired Brandon Rigaud to replace retiring fire chief Dan Crutchfield. Crutchfield was hired as the city's fire chief in 2019. Rigaud is expected to take over the position on December 1st. He will lead a $3.3 million department that includes 12 professional firefighters, 10 volunteer firefighters, and administrative support staff. Rigaud started his firefighting career as a wildland firefighter with the U.S. Forest Service, and later participated in the interagency hotshot crews, tackling the most challenging wildfires. He then joined the Grants Pass Fire Department, rising to the position of Battalion Chief. He has also served as the Battalion Chief for Cathedral City, California's Fire and EMS Department. Rigaud has taught Fire Academy courses with Rogue Community College for almost a decade, and also founded a software development company focused on scheduling applications for first responders. I'm Katie Frankowitz, reporting for KMUN.
Nehalem residents raised concerns over water supply and watershed health as the city developed a forest management plan. City leaders heard a report on the city's 884-acre forest, centering around Bob's Creek, which provides the city's drinking water, at a recent city council meeting. The city contracted with Sustainable Northwest to help with public outreach around the forest management plan. Daniel Ware, a consultant with Sustainable Northwest, sent out an online survey to residents in April. Ware presented those results at the meeting. Respondents consistently said they wished to see forestry operations halted or seriously curtailed in the Bob's Creek watershed, and felt the city should prioritize watershed health more highly. Respondents also voiced concerns around seasonal shortages of water in the summer months caused by harvests and the city's ability to support future growth. A draft of the forest management plan will be brought to council in November, including several different harvest scenarios for them to choose between. This story comes to us through a news partnership with the Tillamook Headlight Herald, online at tillamookheadlightherald.com. The Board of Commissioners for Port of Tillamook Bay is beginning the process to sell the historic Hangar B for the price of $1. After a December storm left the Hangar B with a repair bill ranging from $4 to $5 million, the Port of Tillamook's Bay Board directed staff to stop repairs in May. The port previously publicized the hangar's availability for a $1 purchase price, but required that prospective buyers show proof of several million dollars of liquid funds to support repairs to the structure. Commissioners tentatively agreed to a deal with Vintage Aviation Museum, a nonprofit that preserves vintage aircrafts, to open the hangar to the public once the hanging piece of roof is removed. The museum can begin repair work on the damaged section once they obtain $3 million in performance and payment bonds to ensure the completion of those repairs. Agreements for the sale of the building and land lease, also detailed in the term sheet, will be finalized once the flap has been removed. The museum would forego a due diligence period prior to the purchase and agree to buy the property as is, assuming all liability of the building and maintenance responsibilities. This story is brought to us through a news partnership with the Tillamook Headlight Herald, online at tillamookheadlightherald.com.
You're listening to KMUN. You're listening to local and regional news on KMUN. I'm Katie Frankowitz. Police in Washington County, Oregon, have launched a homicide investigation after five people were found dead at a home near Forest Grove early Saturday morning. OPB's Joni Audenland reports.
Details about the crime are still extremely thin, but police say all five people found were victims of homicide and that it was not a random act. Forest Grove Fire Department initially responded to a 911 call about a vehicle on fire at the home when the bodies were discovered. Authorities also found multiple dead animals at the scene. Police do not have a suspect in custody. The killings took place in a remote part of Washington County, about 25 miles west of Portland. The home is surrounded by farmlands and is not visible from the main road. Investigators say they are still working on identifying victims and notifying their families. Anyone with information is encouraged to call the Washington County Sheriff's Office. I'm Joni Audenland, reporting from Forest Grove, Oregon.
OPB reported Sunday night that the suspect in the killing was found dead in his vehicle in Washington State. Authorities say 36-year-old Benjamin Parker appeared to have died by suicide. The Washington County Sheriff's Office in Oregon says the investigation into the Forest Grove killings remains active.
Oregon governor's race appears to be set, and as Dirk Vanderhart reports, the field features fewer candidates than any gubernatorial contest in more than two decades.
Last weekend, the state's Working Families Party voted to go with Governor Tina Kotek as its nominee. That's not too surprising. The party has cross-nominated Democrats in each governor's race since 2014. But the development is notable nonetheless. The Working Families Party appears to be the last of Oregon's minor parties to nominate in the governor's race. Its decision not to put forward a candidate of its own means the race should feature Kotek, Republican State Senator Christine Drazen, and Brett Smith, a nominee for the left-leaning Pacific Green Party. Assuming that doesn't change, it would mark the first time an Oregon governor's race has featured just three candidates since 2002. This year's contest looks competitive, with Drazen leading Kotek in the only poll released publicly so far. The question is whether Smith, representing a progressive party, siphons votes away from the Democrat. I'm Dirk Vanderhart, reporting.
The General Services Administration wants to build a new fence at Eugene's federal building. As KLCC's Brian Bull reports, this one would be in a different location than a previous fence which sparked a lawsuit.
In a notice filed with the U.S. District Court of Oregon on Tuesday, the GSA said a permanent security fence is planned to surround the employee parking lot on the northwest side of the facility. A diagram filed with the court shows the fence would not block public access to the federal building's courtyard areas. The GSA is the defendant in a lawsuit brought by the Civil Liberties Defense Center on behalf of six activists who said a previous fence restricted access to the plaza and limited free speech. That fence was removed in early July as a result of a court order. The GSA says it plans to have the new fence done by the end of the year, with funding secured by early September. I'm Brian Bull, reporting in Eugene.
A plaintiff with the lawsuit tells KLCC that the new fence is still problematic, as it would keep activists from monitoring the traffic moving in and out of Eugene's federal building, including ICE's detainment and transportation of people. The biotechnology company Genentech is expanding into Hillsboro. Genentech has had a huge presence in Hillsboro since 2006. The company said Thursday that it's pouring $750 million into a pharmaceutical manufacturing facility. The company has a 75-acre facility in Hillsboro. The move is expected to create 450 new jobs in manufacturing and construction. Some state dollars will go towards securing the project, but the exact amount is unknown. A spokesman for the governor's office said the final negotiations are underway. Two of Oregon's major women's sports teams have a new state-of-the-art practice facility. The WNBA's Portland Fire and professional women's soccer team, the Thorns, unveiled their new Hillsboro Training Center this week. Kyra Buckley reports. For decades, female athletes have gotten used to training in facilities designed for men. However, as women's sports grow in visibility, so has the call for equal access to training facilities that support athletes of all genders. That was vital to Lisa Bethal-Mirage when she took over as one of the owners of the Thorns and the Fire.
Portland, as we did our research, has been longstanding the global epicenter of women's sports. We're just doing our part to cement it that way.
Their part includes opening the 100,000-square-foot Kaiser Permanente Performance Center. It's equipped with two soccer fields, two basketball courts, and lounges and locker rooms the players help design. I'm Kyra Buckley, reporting.
Starbucks plans to lay off an additional 224 employees in Washington this fall. And more than half are workers who refuse to relocate to Starbucks' new Nashville office. KUOW's Monica Nicholsberg has more.
Starbucks said 120 of the laid-off workers were given the choice to move to Nashville and said no. That's according to a state filing shared with KUOW. The layoff is part of Starbucks's previously announced restructuring under new CEO Brian Nickel. He was hired in 2024 to course-correct the financially stagnating company. And his Back to Starbucks plan has included hundreds of store closures and thousands of layoffs. Starbucks declined to comment on the additional role eliminations reported Thursday. The company announced plans to open a Nashville logistics hub back in March. Monica Nicholsberg, KUOW News.
When they migrate to the Pacific Northwest in the summer, purple martins rely on human-made structures for their nesting sites. The Tacoma Parks Department maintains some of the boxes, and it seems they're being used. NWPB's Lauren Gallup reports.
Down at the Point Defiance Marina in Tacoma, people are seeing purple martin chicks. That's proof that the nesting boxes the zoo put up a little over a year ago are attracting the migrating birds. Zachary Hahn is the conservation program coordinator for Point Defiance Zoo and Aquarium. He says since people have been putting up more nesting sites for the birds, we're seeing more of them in the South Sound.
Without the boxes, the birds wouldn't be as having as much of a recovery in the region.
As we walk along the boardwalk, Han gets out his binoculars and asks his colleague to take a look.
Sam, who is this?
Lo?
Yeah. That's a purple martin.
These birds have dark bluish-purple feathers. They have blunt tails and are bigger than other swallows. Right now, the adult purple martins are foraging for large insects to feed their chicks. The birds swoop down to the nesting sites to feed, then back up into the sky to collect more food. They'll do this until their babies are ready for migration this fall, all the way to South America. In Tacoma, I'm Lauren Gallup.
In rural Idaho, a group of elementary-aged children on the Nez Perce Reservation organized a summer hiking club. The kids say they like the exercise, seeing animals, and getting to spend time with their friends. NWPB's Rachel Sun reports from the fire trail in Lapway.
It's around 8:30 in the morning when a group of children, all between the ages of 8 and 11, pause on their hike. They're going up a steep hill that overlooks the town of Lapway, Idaho. They settle into the dry grass and gaze out at the expansive valley across from them. Some of them chat about school, life, and video games.
I have Modern Warfare 3, not Black Ops 3. Modern Warfare 3 is way better.
Really
better? Yes.
9-year-old Vic Holt is busy exploring and finds a feather on the ground.
It looks like a hawk feather. I'm not sure if there's any more.
He affixes that feather in his hair, then finds a stone with the perfect little indent to
put my thumb down. Boom. Thumb hole. That's cool.
When Vic's dad, James Holt, joins them at the lookout spot, the kids listen as he points out landmarks and tells stories.
So the community sweat lodge would be right there in those trees, right in the middle of those trees down there.
How do they make the sweat lodge?
We use willows that grow along the creek bottom there. We use willows because they're really bendy because they're full of water. Mm. And willows is something that the beaver gave us like thousands of years ago. So we use those willow branches.
This kind of exploration and play isn't just fun. It also serves an important developmental role. Research has linked outdoor play with benefits for children, including increased confidence, enhanced mental health, social competence, anxiety prevention, and creativity. While his dad talks with other kids, Vic wanders down to look at the hill below.
I see something in the grass.
I see it.
What is it?
In the grass?
He's looking at a clump of green brush that's poking out of the yellow grass. It looks kind of like a face.
I see the head right there, then the glasses. I can't see any hair, so I think he's bald.
Getting up early to hike a steep hill on a hot summer day might not be what most grown-ups expect their children to do during summer break, but this group has made a regular habit of it. It's gotten the attention of other community members, too. When some other hikers pass the boys, one makes a point to give the group's founder, 11-year-old Quentin Q. Longfox, a fist bump.
And some people in the community have been calling these kids the Fire Trail Warriors, which I think they like.
That's Q's mom, Tashina Rainbow Wilson. Tashina says Q has been going on hikes with her since he was so little that she needed to carry him on her shoulders. Q says he likes seeing animals like rabbits and deer, and that being outdoors makes him feel calm.
That is really fun to go out and hike with other people. Not being on a screen.
Q's friend, 11-year-old Hudson Spees, says he likes the exercise and that
I think it's fun and it like brings all of us together so we can talk about things that most of us wouldn't talk about around other people.
The kids say they don't really know why everyone is so interested in their hike club. But James Holt says people in town have never seen something like this before.
And so just to have them empower each other to do it is an amazing thing. And I think that's really what galvanized it for the community, seeing them empower themselves, volunteer and want to do it. The want, that's good.
Reporting from the Fire Trail in Lapway, Idaho, I'm Rachel Sun.
Local and regional news is brought to you by our news partners and by the KMUN News Team. For more local and regional news, go to kmun.org/news. American Democracy Minute is up next. You're listening to KMUN.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. We're back in Missouri, where a Cole County Circuit Court judge ruled August 19th that a proposed November citizen ballot initiative, stonewalled by the Secretary of State, could not constitutionally change voting districts. The Missouri Supreme Court will hear an appeal September 2nd. In response to President Donald Trump's call for mid-decade redistricting to gerrymander more GOP congressional seats, the Missouri legislature racially diluted Greater Kansas City's 5th District, held by 11-term Democratic Congressman Emmanuel Cleaver. The Missouri Supreme Court later found the racially gerrymandered map was constitutional. Pro-democracy group People Not Politicians Missouri launched a citizen ballot initiative to overturn the map, but after slow-walking acceptance of the measure for months, Secretary of State Denny Hoskins rejected it August 6th as unconstitutional. The Missouri Independent reports that Cole County Judge Daniel Green ruled the state constitution referendum provisions, which allow citizens to challenge any laws passed by the legislature, don't apply to legislature-drawn congressional districts. That's contrary to a 1962 state Supreme Court ruling that redistricting maps were subject to a referendum. August 20th, the Missouri Supreme Court set September 2nd to hear the redistricting case and another measure making it more difficult for the legislature to overturn citizen ballot initiatives. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
You're listening to KMUN.